sides, civil rights issues on the streets of Santa Cruz and around the country. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse. Stay with me for 2 hours of talk, music, and broadsides. Yes, broadsides. Your phone calls, 427-3772, are welcome. We have special guests today, and more about that in a moment, but let's get into our intro here.
Bummed a ride as far as San Jose. Rode aboard a Greyhound till I ran out of dough. Landed on my can in Monterey. But I see a lot of things along the way. And I did a lot of thinking on the way. I rode by a house with the windows lighted up, looking brighter than a Christmas tree. And I said to myself, as I rode by myself, everybody thought of home but me. I rode by a house where the moon was on the porch and the girl was on her feather's knee. And I said to myself, as I rode by myself, everybody thought of home but me. I am free and I'm happy to be free. To be free in the way I want to be. But once in a while, when the road is kinda dark and the end is kinda hard to see, I look up and I cry to a cloud going by. Won't there ever be a home for me?
From Pipe Dreams, which is a little-known musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein from the late 40s, based on John Steinbeck's book Sweet Thursday, for all of you musical buffs and historical archivists. You're on the air with Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We are crammed with guests here. However, we also have a crisis situation developing that I need to investigate, and hopefully we'll bring to you live on the air. In order to do that, however, we're going to have to zip into some interviews, some taped interviews, so bear with us. The interviews are interesting, and we will get to the live guests and the crisis in just a moment. This is your radio station, Free Radio, and the phone number here is 427-3772 if you want to join us.
Council comes out Tuesday nights, trying to limit constitutional rights. And when asked about somewhere to sleep, they will answer in voices so sweet, "You will sleep by and by on that glorious park bench in the sky, way up high. Work and shop till you drop, and you can lie in the sky when you die." Well, the council wants things to be nice, but the poor here are paying the price. And when asked about somewhere to sit, they will have a hysterical fit. You can sit by and by on that golden sidewalk in the sky. It'll be okay to sit someday. You can lie in the sky when you die. That's a lie. Well, some think that just asking for bread warrants police to beat on your head. And when asked, hey, can you spare a dime? They answer, in time, yes, in time. We'll spare a dime by and by in that great commercial district in the sky. But till that day, get out of my way. You can lie in the sky when you die. Well, the council, they tend to forget the recession is not over yet. And the merchants hold poor folk to blame. To the homeless, they sing this refrain. You will sleep by and by on that glorious park bench in the sky. Work and shop till you drop. And you can lie in the sky when you die. That's a lie.
Well, that was that very famous and well-voiced singer, Bathrobe's Pierre Robert, doing a rendition of an old wobbly tune from the Industrial Workers of the World, which we sang about a year and a half ago when the Wobblies did a, 70, 80-person strong sleepout in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz to protest the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which, as you know, prohibits people from sleeping outside, falling asleep, mind you, sleeping outside between 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning, in the council's wise attempt to regulate our sleeping habits. That will be a collector's item for all you folks who've recorded that song, and I will, of course, expect royalties and a piece of the take. But let's turn to some of our studio guests here. We have an impromptu guest that we found at Taco Bell, a man who's just arrived in Santa Cruz. Actually, he's been in Santa Cruz. Why don't you come on up to the mic here, Ray? It is Ray, right?
Yes.
And your name is Ray Chester, right, Ray?
Yes.
Okay, hang on now. Speaking of the mic, let's see if we've got two mics active.
Well, thank you. What this mainly involves is that I've just been released from prison.
Yeah, Ray, you spent 2.5 years in Folsom Prison for what crime?
Possession of cocaine.
And you were telling me that there are a lot of folks in Folsom who are in prison for that kind of offense, namely drugs.
Well, I would say that, yes, basically drug-related offenses. There's a lot of different crimes involved, but I'd say there is a vast majority of people there that are just under the possession phase of drugs, not with intent to distribute or anything like that, just basically for their own personal use.
Now, that was your crime, possession, or were you
yes.
a salesperson?
No, only possession. I don't believe in sales to other people. I just believe in relieving myself, getting out of reality. I believe, instead of coming home and having a beer after work, I want to snort some cocaine.
Gotcha. And you, of course, paid for that with 2.5 years of your life.
Yes, sir.
Quite a heavy price, and probably a heavy price for society, since they had to pay for putting you up, and society had to pay for... Presumably you were not involved in any violent crimes, or was that also part of this?
No, sir. It was strictly possession of cocaine. I was high. I was very high in cocaine one time, numerous times in Santa Cruz. And the officers, the police, they were aware of the bag. And one time they just checked me, and they found a certain amount of cocaine out of my possession, and they arrested me.
Now, you told me that today, after 8 days, you've been released for 8 days now?
Yes.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
8 days.
So you've been here 8 days.
Yes, sir.
Are you a native? Were you born here? Or?
No, sir.
Uh-huh. You can call me Robert if you want, but you can call me sir if you like, whatever feels good. I don't...
Well, I am so accustomed to saying sir and yes, sir, mm-hmm. that...
Just don't call me... Well, you can call me ma'am if you want. That would be probably a little unusual, though.
Well, that is very unlikely because I haven't seen a lady in so many years.
There's one right over there.
Well, please, no...
No pointing, I know. Well, look, so you've been here for 8 days, and if you've been here, what's the situation for a person just released from jail? You tell me now you find yourself homeless. What's the background behind that?
Well, what it is is that when I am released from prison, they give me $200, you know, they call it gate money. And they give me $200, so I have to report here to Santa Cruz, so I come here, and with that $200, I pay for a week's worth of rent at a motel down here, you know, at a low-income motel. I mean, I don't know, $50 a night, I mean, you know, it was reasonable, so I paid for a week's worth of rent there, and then I go about, you know, trying to start different various things, you know, and... I do what is necessary, you know, and well, now I am basically with no funds left, whatever, and I've talked to various people. My parole officer, he watches me every day. I have to speak to him every day.
Every day.
Yes, sir. And
how long will that have to go on?
Well, until I get a permanent place of residency.
I see.
Yes, and then
you're going to have to spare change a quarter to call this guy, right? Every day.
Well, that would be very unlikely because if I was to cause a misdemeanor infraction, I would return back to prison.
So, in fact, you're going to have to use psychic communication with your parole officer because you won't have the money to use a phone.
Well, sir, what I would have to do is I'd have to walk to his office.
And I notice you have a cane as you walk. You had some sort of injury to your leg?
Yes, sir. I was hit by a car a couple of years ago, and it is difficult for me to walk, you know, but I mean, I carry myself that is acceptable by the general population, by the average person.
I think that's a nice looking cane you got. It kind of folds up, I notice.
Yes, well, it stays out of the way that way. What it is, though, is that, yes, I can't deny the fact I am handicapped, so my parole officer says I do not have to work, but I do have to stop my Social Security income back. Now, what that in states is that it takes approximately 2 months before I can start receiving my Social Security.
So in the meantime, you get to sleep on the streets and eat at the soup kitchens, right?
Yes, sir. Basically.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Any other horror stories to tell us around this issue, or just the normal difficulties that you're having getting your life started again on the outside?
Well... I hope you don't mind me calling you Robert.
No, fine.
Basically, I am trying to adhere by their rules and regulations. The authority figure in Santa Cruz says do not do any illegal activity. Do not.
No jaywalking.
Okay, exactly. Mm-hmm. Except that, basically. And, what it is that is all that I know what to do, mm-hmm. basically, and then I am forced to get back into that environment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'd be telling you that I'm not gonna, but I am forced. I have nothing else to do. What can I do?
I hope that... your parole officer recognizes that these kinds of statements are protected under the First Amendment, that you are simply stating the plight of any person in your situation, and you're not specifically expressing an intention to engage in any particular criminal conduct.
That's correct.
But you're suspecting that conditions may make it difficult for you to engage in legal behavior of a normal sort.
That's correct. I mean, I just want everybody to realize that I am just not an average citizen just struggling along in society. I mean, I am necessary. It is necessary that I receive certain type of assistance that is not being provided by the authorities.
I hear you. We're going to turn to a brief taped segment about what's happening up north. I believe it's Berkeley, although my facility with these tapes is not the best. The person who helps me with these tapes did not have time this morning to label all the tapes. So it's going to be potpourri and pick your tape here. But we have a second set of guests, and I want you to feel free to finish with anything you think needs to be said, Ray, about anything around the issue of poor people, prisoners, your life as it looks to you in the future, the kinds of difficulties you expect to encounter, and hey, anything you think that would educate the public around any of these issues.
Well, all that I can state is that if the society in Santa Cruz believes that the person or persons is on an honest go for thriving in his lifestyle, then he should receive the assistance that is necessary. And thank you.
And thank you, Ray. Again, to remind you, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz that you're listening to, 96.3 FM. Call in 427-3772. Our lines are open, and if for some reason we haven't been picking up the phone, we're going to attempt to remedy that. And we're going to, I'm examining the phone right now for any suspicious bugs. No, just kidding, folks. The phone is working. Give a call to 427-3772, and we'll be able to hear you.
I'm on the line to poet Julia Vinaigrette. How you doing, Julia?
Fine.
How's life in Berkeley?
Oh, going crazy. I survived the holidays. I've been selling my new book, A Door with Wings.
Ah, yes. I got one of those last time I was in town. Autographed, even. Are you working on another book?
I've been doing a lot of writing and putting stuff together.
Uh-huh. Any particular themes that you find yourself focusing on in the last month or so, or just anything you want to say on that?
Oh, just everything is felt, I don't know, weird, breakable?
Breakable, fragile?
Yeah.
Have you had any reaction to, I guess, you mentioned you'd written a poem about Yitzhak Rabin, and you also mentioned that you had been writing a lot. You've got a couple poems there that you're going to kind of run by us.
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay, I called this one War, and I hope it is true.
Mm-hmm.
War walks through the streets touching no one yet. He keeps his hands in his pockets and his eyes dart out from under a baseball cap occasionally, appraising. There's a corner flower stand. He's always liked the flowers, all those cemeteries. He sends a private smile to wrap around the roses, crinkly as cellophane. There are troops in yesterday's newspaper, and they may be crumpled and thrown away like yesterday's newspaper. War isn't thinking of them, not yet. He looks like any other runaway, thin, not to be trusted, an explosion of nerves and cold hands, mouth warm as the muzzle of a just-fired gun. The streets do not collapse smoke behind him. There are no purple trees and screens. War whistles under his breath, feeling his way. Staggering street guys collect plastic bags of squashed tin cans. Spiders collect drained flies. War has his own collection. The glamour of heroes larger than life is not alive anymore. Medals of extreme valor, meals ready to eat, marching songs, fingerprints falling like snowflakes, no two alike. But time has to break around his wrist where we have a pulse and war has us. It's important to him to know what it all looked like before. Street cleaners in the morning rain, shop windows spilling treasure chests of costume jewelry, secretaries pulling up their blinds in badly heated rooms and stirring the mirror like stew, high heels rattling past like machine guns. War studies everything almost gently. He waits.
Wow. Sympathetic. hatred of war. I like it.
Well, not entirely sympathetic.
Not entirely, but not entirely hostile either.
It's the way you feel when something is coming close enough to see, coming into focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like focusing a camera. Then I looked at it afterwards and I said, that's creepy.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Give me another one.
Okay. Morning fog, which ought to be apropos now. Every morning fog thick as a murder mystery in an old movie. Whoever is following me can get very close. Whoever is following you can get very close. Would you like to be followed? Would you like to be the only source of light to a lover or a mugger? The fog's a white dust cloth over buildings as over old furniture abandoned in an attic. The rest of the world doesn't matter. Whoever's following me waits in a doorway, tasting my exhaled breath as I pass as an appetizer. Whoever's following you regrets the anonymous gloves. Your skin is warm. In this fog, we are all followed. In this fog, we all follow. What doorway are you standing in, silently waiting? Who is worth waiting for?
Got another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
I like that one too, of course.
It isn't what you're looking for. I'm not sure if I have what you're
looking for. No, they are what I'm looking for. These are all going to go on the air.
Okay.
You're on the air now, kiddo.
Yeah.
And by the way, if people want to get your book, how can they write for it, and where can they get it?
Well, they have copies at Cody's.
Which is in Berkeley, but we're broadcasting from Santa Cruz, so.
Oh, have them write me. I'm at 1630 University Avenue.
1630 University Avenue.
Apartment number 34.
Apartment 34.
Berkeley 94703.
Berkeley 94703. Okay.
And, yeah, this is my most recent poem. It's called New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes all over the map.
Go for
it's
it.
It's longish.
Mm-hmm.
New Year's Eve. So many of last year's memories are in the freezer, not to be looked at till they're at the bottom of an ice cube melting in a strong drink at the end of a party, and the memory doesn't bite our tongues till we're drunk enough to ignore it. Not just bad memories, but ones that don't fit. Time's hiccups. Something about time. I'm over half a century old. I should have learned something about time. I believe in World War II and God, both of which started before I was born, and in sweet rock candy on a string. I forget why they took it off the market, but I can still feel how sticky it made my fingers and half my face. Each new year is the first year that ever was, like each love. No one ever loved before, and I must believe them all. Each year, each love, any forever that shines against the dark, however briefly, all our moans and card tricks. Time is only a question. Answer it. A child who just dissected grandfather's pocket watch sits on the floor, surrounded by coils, wheels, and levers, and tries to glue the hands over his upper lip for a fake mustache. Here's time, chortling with implacable whims. He puts everything in his mouth. He puts everyone in his mouth. Time runs out on a parking meter, or a marriage, or a patient who isn't convalescing in the convalescent home. Time is famous for standing still, but it hasn't been caught yet. I should have learned something. Each season exists on a different planet all year around. Each season breathes always in a different language. I value each day because my time is limited. That's how I know this is not my time. Each time belongs only to those who know they'll live forever with time to throw away. I like to watch them wear the trappings of savagery for protection. Piercings, studs, chains, tattoos, their own strokeable throats. And yes, I believe them, as I believe in each year, each love, God, and World War II. Time can take care of the contradictions. We hurt each other. I don't know if we hurt each other more than we used to, but we used to be more surprised by it. We tried to hide it. Now when time wears a bloody coat, that's just the coat he's wearing. If I were still living forever with a hook deep in my throat pulling me up to the sun, I'd change everything. I wouldn't need any help. I remember. Time forgets. We are his only memories. He comes back for bedtime stories, and we tell him mainly what should have happened and try to believe it ourselves. Because time slept in my body, time learned more about me than I learned about him. but time forgets. Our breath forgets our mouths. Our fingerprints change when we have bad dreams. We're tightrope walkers between the centuries where dark is a long way down, where suicide plums splat on rocks below, a spreading purple stain with rotting pits. We are the baby born at midnight. This time we'll get it right. This time.
Julia, good stuff.
I tried to warn you.
Oh, boy. That was good. Your books are selling for, what, $3 each?
Yeah.
And your latest book is?
A Door with Wings.
And again, if you want to pick up that book, repeat your address.
1630 University Avenue, number 34, Berkeley, 94703. Can I read one more? It's shorter.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, called Portrait.
Mm-hmm.
He's 19 and glows in the dark. From here on, it's all downhill. His only wish is to be wished on like a falling star. Homes are only TV settings to advertise instant coffee, mouthwash, and vacuum cleaners. He lives in a cleaner vacuum, couch surfing in an ocean of breaking beds. He balances his body against all expectations as night flesh crashes and sobs against his skin. He doesn't care enough to be unkind. He's even vaguely sorry for everyone who isn't him. Lately, he's been telling each new person a different life story, so when he dies young or the world ends, he'll have memories witnessed and believed in. He loses his own life as it happens. Surfers don't remember names of waves. Rich and Famous is a consolation prize for people who can't get into nightclubs on their looks. Why should he live as if there were a future? A future is for people left out now, planning to get even. Couch surfers wipe out. Falling stars crash and burn. He knows it doesn't matter. Look at him, thin wrist raised to the curl of his mouth. Make a wish.
Well, thank you very much.
At least it's local.
Hey, I'll be calling you again for more poetry, if that's okay.
Oh, sure, anytime. Maybe next time I'll have something more on your themes. I write circularly a little bit on one thing and then back to something else.
Well, there is, as I said, this council meeting coming up on Tuesday night. You might, who knows, you might even be at the council meeting with a poem. I don't know.
Oh, God, I gave up going to those things a long time ago.
That's a smart move, actually.
You wait like 9 hours, and then you get to talk for 3 minutes if they pull your card.
And then they don't listen to you, of course.
They don't listen because everybody who's turned up has already made up their mind in all directions.
Yeah.
But the best thing I can do, and I'd like to ask, am I still on the air?
Sure.
I'd like to ask anybody who is going to the council meeting, I have a lot of poems on the park.
Mm-hmm.
I would be very, very, very flattered, and I'd feel like I was maybe helping if somebody would Xerox up some and pass them around just to give people, feeling of perspective and memories.
Historical vantage point.
Yeah, well, they'll all be talking about everything that's wrong with the park now, and it's so easy to forget. I want people to remember how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have like 20 people's park poems in my book.
Maybe you can collect them.
The books are around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people have them. You know, just Xerox up one and bring it to the meeting and pass it out. It can do a lot more good than I can.
And that was Julia Vinograd, a Berkeley poet who has written 41 books. I believe it's 41. Her most recent is, I think it's A Window with Wings, if I heard that right. A Door with Wings. Thank you, Anne. I actually have the book, but I guess I've got to look at it again. She lives in Berkeley. I called her in Berkeley this morning. You heard her from Berkeley. That was her voice of about an hour and a half ago. The council meeting she's referring to is a Berkeley City Council meeting on Tuesday night, which will decide the fate of People's Park, which, as some of you know, is the park used by the community, used by homeless people, used by everybody, which the University of California wishes to turn into a upscale, yuppie sports court area, essentially as part of its continuing desire to dominate all the property around. It, university just seems to be like an expanding amoeba. And, of course, to some extent, it has some support from merchants nearby, but also there's a lot of Berkeley that's rather apprehensive about the possibility of a repeat of the 1991 violence and tumult produced by police abuse and protest with respect to that park, which has been an open space for 25 years now, since 1969, when people claimed it for the community. It had previously been a mud hole, which had been produced by the university because they wanted to eliminate the low-income housing there that they feared was being used by bohemians and hippies. And we're going to have an interview with Michael Pachovis, who's a community activist in Berkeley, a bit later. But now we're going to turn to both more local and perhaps more national topic. We have in the studio, I believe your name is Presium? Presentium.
Correct.
Presentium, yes. It sounds like a Latin name, Presentium. Where did you get that name?
Well, the ending is Latin. The I-U-N is a Latin ending, meaning a place we're in. So it's a put together of two words, present, and in, meaning a place. Mm-hmm. So it basically means the place wherein God lives.
And I first heard about you yesterday through my New Brighton Beach camper friend, a River Street refugee, a member of the Save Our Shelters group, and a former occupant of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who continues to make his way outdoors, and also he's doing some work as a juggler. I think we actually had an interview with Dan, which we hope to play later in the show, but we hope to play lots of things, and sometimes we never get to it, so forgive us, Dan, if we don't get to you. Presenting you ran across Dan sometime in the last few days, and I guess the New Brighton Beach campers.
Yes, they happened to show up at the Brighton Beach camp the morning following my stay there at the campsite. And on our way out, we saw a sign which said something concerning the land, which was a quotation from Tolstoy, which I don't memorize.
This was a sign which the campers themselves had hand-lettered and set up, right?
Correctly, correct. And so we stopped and went back to the campsite and read the sign, and then left and then returned in the evening.
I think the sign says something about the land belongs to the people. Something to that effect.
Something along that line, and that it should stay in the hands, to take it away from the people, it's a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at the sign, and so we started kind of making a little change in the sign, because if we go into the deeper truth of the situation, the word people and person relate more to the mask identity. We don't call it the fiction, and define it as a fiction.
Mask as in a Halloween mask?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to the Greek theater times, when the mask was known then more consciously than now, that the mask was simply a facade, a fiction. And behind the mask is the real actor. And so all the drama plays and so on have that theme throughout. And so the word person, and people, which has the same root, means through, and so on, means the mask through which the real actor sounds.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, who and what is the real actor? And since the real actor happens to be none other than what everyone is looking for, the big G-O-D, which everyone calls the one in the sky, and can barely recognize functioning in the physical body, and therefore the entire planet, everyone tends to think it belongs to the person or the people, but the fact is that it belongs to what we live. And what we live happens to be a soul, and happens to be God, and happens to be everything that creates creation. And it's there in the Bible also. There are numerous quotes in the Bible which refer to it in Genesis and throughout from the Old and New Testament. So it's been given documentation, just that most of them can't find it because they're too busy identifying with the mask and not with what we live. So looking at that sign, we began to change a word or two, and it turns out that the land, which is called the land, is really none other than the body of God. Happens to be this planet, happens to be the solar system, happens to be the galaxies, happens to be the whole of creation, be there a form or not. And that's just the fact of the situation, and I would go on record here at this point in time that it's so provable by experience. It's a point of fact provable to anyone willing to withstand any period of time to deal with experience which is beyond their normal comprehension. Provable from this point on into the future. And I'll stand on record anywhere on this planet to be able to prove that as a fact. Which brings me to raising the issue of whether home is sustainable and what to do in a practical sense.
Very good. That I'd like to hear about. What's the significance of this understanding, whether it's proved or not? There's certainly many of us who believe it to be true. Some of us don't call it God. Some of us call it something else. But nonetheless, what's the significance then? From where do we go?
Right, because we have we're dealing with the body, and since we're all on this planet, we all happen to be walking around in a physical body. So, I mean, it's an absolute requirement to utilize the materials that appear on this planet to maintain the physical support system or principle as it is. Fruits, vegetables, the materials for so-called shelter and so on. Those are just basic requirements for maintaining the physical level, which is primarily a support system for our spiritual and deeper reality, which is here also. Just that most don't see it all the time. But you see it if they're even looking for it. It can come out right in front of their nose, right through the entire body, and they barely recognize it. In most cases, they do not. It's something to watch and behold, which I've done many, many times. And that's just the fact of the situation as far as my experience is concerned. So we have a situation where everything on the planet, the gold, the silver, the uranium, the plutonium, all of it belongs to what we live. But we're not using it as if it belongs to what we live. It's put forth as if it's owned by some other entities who create it and lend it to some others to use it. While everyone else doesn't participate in the creation of the means by which we go about using it and so on. It creates quite a gap.
A division.
That's, at this point in time, showing up in the United States of America and the planet in general, on a grand scale. There are specific issues involved. If I pinpoint it to the gentleman who spoke earlier.
Ray,
he comes out of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's given $200. I'm sure that system, if they had some degree of rationality, probably more blindness than rationality, would recognize that it requires 2 months for him to be back on Social Security, and that $200 is more than sufficient in our times, economically, to bridge the time period of 80 days. $200 can barely get you through 2 weeks, maybe a month, if you are economically sound. The other fact is that I know very few who have ever been on cocaine for any period of time who can rationally function on a pure, clean, daily basis and keep it all together under the present conditions. So we have quite a conundrum of factors here. And we have a culture that's turning out to be numb.
I think that Ray, of course he hasn't been on cocaine presumably, although who knows what goes on in prison, for 2.5 years, but he has been in prison for 2.5 years and essentially had all his food and shelter needs
taken care of.
Not his spiritual needs, of course. The obvious used to deny you your spiritual needs.
Absolutely.
But now that he's outside, he's suddenly expected to manage all these things on $200.
totally.
Good luck, folks.
Good luck, absolutely. Without providing the bridge means so that he can conduct his affairs properly and maintain a clean life. I don't know of any. There are very few that have been able to do it. So he's in a situation where now we go another step. It's a built-in trap. He's given $200. He's functioning under statutory jurisdiction. The Constitution, which you made a reference to, the First Amendment and so on, is not valid in our culture today. Everyone who believes that we have a Constitution that has validity in our point in time is, I would say, living in the past.
Now, do you mean that the Constitution is being disregarded by the authorities who should be following it? Or do you mean that the essence of the Constitution is somehow doesn't really cover the reality of what we need to be concerned with?
I would have to say both.
Okay, why don't you go on and tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. Elaborate. Let's go back to, I would have to say, well, 1933 it became more technically out of open. In 1933, I think it was March 9th, March 6th, 1933, Congress gave Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president of the corporate United States of America, of which there's a distinction between the corporate state of the United States of America, and the national union of the United States of America. This is our Declaration of Independence constitutional material. If you look closely, you'll find it there. And he was given emergency powers upon request. Congress gave them. Roosevelt declared a state of emergency, which began confiscating all of the gold and silver, meaning the property, because up to that time, everyone was able to hold gold and silver as private property. Confiscated all their private property under criminal procedures, criminal statutes. That's what we're on now, statutory codes. If anyone didn't give up their gold, they'd be liable to prison.
Now, what significance does that have for those campers that you stopped to see because of that sign? Mm.
That property, you know, it's what we create. We have a proper relation to it. So, since we have a proper relation to it, that emergency powers and authority extends all the way to this point in time.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, Presentium. We have a caller who is going to talk on a subject that you can probably tie in to your analysis here. Let's have him join us. You can turn up the radio a little so you can hear him. That's over there.
It's I can turn this up.
Yeah. Hi there, caller. I don't know. Other
one. Yes? Okay. I have to get the right volume set. Okay. Let me turn it in. Listen. That's the number off.
Hang on, caller. I just realized your whole phone plug is our phone plug has been out. You're going to have to begin again from the beginning. And my apologies to those who've been listening in because
we free radio where I work.
Yeah, this is free make it up as you go radio.
Okay.
So
okay, here I start. Okay, outside reporter. Okay.
Okay. Okay. You
are on the radio now?
You are on the radio. Do you want to say who you are?
Okay. Just a reporter outside. Free radio reporter.
Okay, go ahead, free radio reporter.
I'm a Uh-huh. And we're trying to stop this bear, politics that what's going on in the people. There was this person, Gary, whose name was, I asked him to be on the air, but he just kind of ran away. But anyway, this Gary person, Gary's a friend of mine, you call him Gary Meditation, he has a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And he collects his SSI money. Once a month, you know, he gets his little money. He can live on the same subject you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sleeping, he wasn't even sleeping. He was in his camper Wednesday night, I believe it was, at 5 o'clock in the morning. You have some guy came in, goes to his vehicle, opens the window, reaches in, opens the door to his vehicle, and the flashlight comes in, starts flashing the flashlight at people.
Now, by some guy, you of course
listen,
mean.
No, hang on, okay?
You mean a police officer?
Some guy comes in, mm-hmm, into your vehicle, opens, you know, breaking an entrant, that's what it is. He breaks an entrant to somebody's vehicle, a camper.
Mm-hmm.
He tells the person, where's your ID? So far, there's no identification that this is a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend gets out of the vehicle, and once he gets out of the vehicle, there's four police officers on the spot.
In uniform.
In uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Telling him that he can't be here at night. He can't be there where he's at right now.
Now, where was he parked?
He was parked somewhere in Santa Cruz, I believe.
What, downtown Santa Cruz?
Oh, I don't have no idea where it's Santa Cruz.
Right.
So this person got a camping ticket for that.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to fly, he's planning to sue the city department.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to fly a police officer like that, like, you know, they think they're on the planet. Breaking in and entering is private property.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to stop this bear, this sleeping. You can sleep, what is it, a crime to sleep outside?
No, I think you and I both agree that if you, actually, we're going to let our guests comment on that, but go ahead,
Jeff. If we have more campers like this here who are reporting this and tell people what's really going down, instead of letting the police department and the city council say, no, it's just these other people are creating the problem. Well, it's the police department that's creating the problem.
Well, and the city council are keeping this stupid law on the books,
right?
Yeah. But let's see what Presentium, our host, says. Here, you let him talk to you about this.
Let's be a little more technical about the situation. In 1933, the United States of America, national and unnational, was put under emergency authority. That emergency